Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. You want to have some fun?
Yeah, we want to have fun.
Okay, are you ready? Sing along now.
My name is Stanley Bookman, and I come from the world of ink. I live in a town called Storyville that's closer than you think. Just hop online and you will find my online world of fun. There's stories, poems, and features on everything under the sun. Just type in Stories for Children magazine at .org to the end. Come join me in reading adventures, we're sure to become good friends. So come to the world of ink with me, we'll share a story or two. We'll go all over the world, you'll see, we'll have fun the whole day through.
Me to the world of ink.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Stories for Children show at the BTR World of Ink Network with your hosts, V.S. Grenier, and myself, Irene Rose. It is truly an honor to be here with you today. It's Monday, April the 9th, 2012, at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. As always, Stories for Children can be listened to every other Monday of the month here on the World of Ink Network. Or you can listen to it on demand at any time you'd like at the same address or on iTunes. Just search for World of Ink Network and you'll find our shows on iTunes. The chat room will be open today to post your questions as well. If you have a call-in question for our guests, please call 714-242-5259. That's 714-242-5259.
Thanks, Irene. Well, it's great to be back. We kind of had a mini vacation for a while because with all the website updating we've been doing, which our spring issue of Stories for Children magazine isn't even out yet. It's been a hosting nightmare for the sites. It's the only reason why it's not up. And I've got a couple of emails, actually, people asking about that. And I was like, yeah, we're working on that. So hopefully we'll have it up by the end of today, I'm hoping. Since we're working out those glitches, but it's been kind of exciting. It was nice having a few weeks off to just focus on the backside of our business. So, but it's good to be back. We only have one author this month touring with us, which is Nicole. I'm going to mess it up, Nicole.
Borginic.
Right. I'm like, my brain completely was like going to go somewhere else again. So that's exciting to have an author touring with us. I know we've had quite a few people ask us, well, when are you going to do a tour again? When are you going to do a tour again? Because I know everybody loves getting to know the authors and their new books, or even new authors who have self-published and didn't know how to go about marketing the books the first time and do a World of Ink tour with us. So we're excited to have Nicole with us. She's been a contributor to Stories for Children magazine, which is one reason why it's exciting to have her touring with us this month. Besides the fact that she has been writing for a very long time in a bunch of different genres. So to be a part of her new release of her book, The Kids of Dandelion Township, is just an exciting thing because, you know, we meet so many different authors, but to actually work with somebody we've known for a while is a new perk. So we're glad to have you here, Nicole, and to be on the Stories for Children show and to share about your writing and your new book. So welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Oh, you can tell I'm still trying to come off being on Easter break. I'm still in vacation mode this morning.
<That's>
No,
<good.
laughs> seriously. I made an appointment for my dog. I have a friend who's a dog groomer, and she just happens to have her shop not too far from my house, and I asked her if she could get my dog in sometime this month. She's like, oh, yeah, I'll take him in on Monday. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like, well, I have a show, so it's going to have to be, like, after, you know, the radio show. She's like, well, how if I take him, you know, at 8:30 in the morning? And I'm like, really? You want me to get up early on vacation and bring my dog in to be groomed? So I show up, I'm like, in my pajamas, my hair is up in a bun. Oh, yeah, I look really pretty. And I'm like, hello, here I am, dropping off my dog.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah. So I'm like totally in vacation mode still. And yes, I'm still hanging out in my pajamas, actually. But isn't that what's great about doing a blog tour, Nicole? Because I mean, you think about it, you don't have to worry about getting up at like the crack of dawn to do all your hair and makeup and, you know, iron your clothes and stuff. You can just sit at your computer in your bunny slippers and sit here and chat with people, right?
It's true, and that's what's great about being a writer, too. We all know it secretly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I know, I still feel like, my day, even though it starts early, I don't really get dressed and ready for my day until about noon. And today I'm just off.
Why not?
Otherwise, I would pretty much be out of my pajamas by now. But it, like I said, getting my dog groomed this morning just kind of threw me off and having the kids home. So, but that's okay. So, but we're glad to have you here and talk about your book, which happens to be a chapter book for children. So I haven't sat down and actually read the book with my daughter, who just turned 7 yesterday. But
oh,
I will.
Happy
yeah,
birthday.
I know. It's been crazy. Like I said, yeah, I know. I can't believe it. I'm like, 7, really? And it's weird because
wow.
I think about that. And I started writing right after I had her. So every time her birthday rolls around, it actually marks the anniversary of how long I've been writing. So I've been doing this now for 7 years. And
wow.
It's just weird to think it's been that long. It doesn't feel that long. It really doesn't.
I know. Time flies, doesn't it?
It does. It really does. And the magazine's been around for, 6 years, even though we took a hiatus for a year. So, yeah, it's been a crazy roller coaster ride. So speaking about, you know, writing for 7 years for myself, I mean, Nicole, how long have you been writing? I mean, I know you've been at this for quite a while. I mean, you've done from, you know, children's writing to plays, so like short-type plays. So, I mean, I'd love for you to share a little bit about your background and what got you started and the different things you write for. I mean, I know you've been published in the Los Angeles Times as well. I mean, so you've been out there.
Sure, I have. Yes, I'm an old camper, I suppose, in comparison to a lot of the young writers. I've been writing as a published author for about 15 years, and I was writing prior to that, you know, in my youth, just because I loved writing and I loved thinking up stories, and I was sort of interested in scripts always a little bit because I was in actually the television industry for a little while shooting camera. And then I really found that my love is writing and I need to get back into it. And the first thing that spurred me to get published was there was a series of incidents that were just horrific situations in schools where children were having violent outbreaks and there were terrible, tragic situations happening across the United States. I'm sure you remember.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just out of the blue, I called the United Nations and I said, I'd like to write for you. I am thinking about all these things that are occurring. And my first published article actually was an article for their international newsletter, which goes out, you know, across the world. And it basically was about the children in the United States who are working for peace. So what I was trying to do is change the whole attitude of anyone, of all the conversations going on across the world about the kids being a lot of violent children in our country, to say, no, our kids are really involved in wanting peace worldwide. And I went, you know, the article went from UNICEF to children doing theater and fine art and poetry and creating all kinds of great events and basically giving money to the United Nations in an effort to build peace in the world. So that was the beginning of how I started to get published. So it was really an intense thing, which is kind of interesting because I went from that to writing, you know, getting different things published such as poetry, a one-act play, commercial spot produced, and moving into a lot of short stories for children, some for adults, and then getting into articles, just all kinds of articles that were important themes for me. And I went from that to the book. I mean, just bringing it up to date really quickly, the inspiration for the book was, again, sort of a tragic event,
mm-hmm.
in a sense. The Katrina hurricane that occurred was something that I had in my mind, and I invented these friends that reminded me of myself and my friends in different stages of my youth, talking and having fun together. And one of them in this story had moved as a result of Katrina. And even though the part of it is a complete fantasy book. There's mm-hmm. nothing real about it except that the children deal with real emotions, real situations that all kids deal with, and one of the kids actually sort of had gone through this event with Hurricane Katrina and was very sensitive, and the other children became aware of that, and they all, you know, they're all friends. So
yeah.
Sort of out of these difficult times, I create humor and fun and positive energy, I think. For some reason or another, I like to do that in my writing.
No, I think that's great. My son, who's going to be 16 next month, him and I were, you know, we talk about books a lot and about, you know, just the different topics that are in books. And one of the things that we both had noticed is, you know, a lot of the books have gotten really serious. I mean, you know, and I'm not knocking them. I mean, you know, obviously I never read the Hunger Games series or anything, and I know obviously the movie's coming out. But, you know, they're more serious. They're more, you know, very drama-driven type books out there right now for kids. I mean, you think, because my son read the Barco Tattoo books. My husband just recently read The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo in that series of books, and which, you know, obviously is more for older readers. But, you know, it's just a lot of the books that have been coming out have been very, very dramatic and very deep. And my son's like, you know, what happened to taking these situations and still addressing them, but having them not be so dark, you know, and so heavy. And I'm like, I know, I'm starting to see that trend, and I think people are starting to grab it, you know, wanting books that are, you know, like you said, you know, like your book, you know, The Kids of Dandelion Township, that it still has the whimsy and the fun and the lighthearted, you know, kid spirit in it, while still addressing real issues that kids are dealing with. Because I think sometimes, and I think about that, like in the 70s, I remember everything in the 70s started just becoming so realistic, from movies to books and the storytelling that was like, you know, not that every book has to have a happy ending, but it was like everything didn't have a happy ending, and you're just kind of like, can't we just have, like, it ended happily ever after? You know, at least one
what
story.
What happened to that?
Yeah, well, I don't know, do you guys remember that in the 70s? It was just like,
oh, yeah.
Everything, it was like always kind of like, okay, the story just kind of ended, and you're just like, but where's the happy part, you know?
Right, right.
And I feel like we're starting to get to that a little bit right now with what we're seeing out there that's being published right now and being produced right now in movies. And so it's such a refreshing thing to see, you know, your book come out this month, and the fact that it's, you know, even though there's, you know, real life things that are, you know, happening, like you said, you know, kids dealing with, you know, having to learn to be friends, even if they come from, you know, different diverse backgrounds, and, you know, moving or disaster or whatever, that you still can be a kid and have that fantasy in your life as well. Because I mean, I think that's, kids need that. I think that's what helps them. I know for me, when I was a kid, that's what helped get me through a lot of the tough times as a kid, was having my imaginary friends and playing make-believe. I don't think I would have gotten through my parents being divorced and stuff without that in my life. You know? So let's talk about your book, The Kids of Dandelion Township, because the biggest thing I loved about the book was the fact that you don't just address the fact that, you know, everybody needs to learn to get along and be friends. It's, you know, each of these kids come from not just, you know, having different skin. They have different religious backgrounds. I mean, they're very diverse in from ethnicity to, like I said, to religion, to their family backgrounds and everything. And I love that, because I think sometimes authors feel like, you know, because they're not from that particular, you know, whatever it is, you know, diversity, that they're like, well, how can I, you know, do I really know what it's like to be, you know, a Jewish kid? Do I really know what it's like to be a kid from, from Africa? Do I really know what it's like to be a kid from China? Do you know? It's hard, and but you really did. You know, I don't know if you purposely went out and did that. I mean, you mentioned that a lot of this was based on people you've known when you were, you know, younger and throughout your life. So I'm wondering, is that how you did these characters? Because it was actually from people that you've known with these different backgrounds, or?
Well, I'll tell you something funny, just because I have to say it, because it's so funny to me. But I'll answer your question next. The funny thing is, I showed the book to a friend of mine, who is, you know, a black, African-American, whatever. And she's one of my best friends from when we were kids. And she showed it to her class. And they liked the book, but they thought that there wasn't enough ethnicity, which really made me laugh. You know, there wasn't an Asian kid, and there wasn't this and that. And, it's funny because to answer your question, I grew up in New York, Manhattan, mm-hmm. New York City. And if you grew up in New York City, Manhattan, you met every international group, every ethnicity, everybody, unless you were incredibly cloistered in some way or another. But even walking down the street, even sitting on a bus, even, you know, you cannot help but have a conversation with people. So in that respect, I have been around many, many different people from many different walks of life, and I've lived a few myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm familiar with people in different backgrounds, so it's very natural for me to write that way. And I have a big imagination, so like most of us writers, if you have just a few details about something, you can go to Mars and back with that feeling. And that's pretty much what I create. I create my characters out of some of the experiences and dialogue and people I've met, and out of my pure invention as well. And it just becomes a character that's unlike anyone in particular, but it's a lot of fun. And and I did do it on purpose because I have a very big belief in the unity of people in a different way. I was brought up differently than a lot of other people. Not necessarily everybody, but there were a lot of marriages in my upbringing as far as my parents went. And so there were Jewish backgrounds and Christian and Catholic and Baptist and surrogate family, and you know, there was always a lot of different things. So we were Jewish, but we were more involved in celebrating Christmas. And then when we went to my relatives, it was Passover. And then if we were in school, it was Easter. So all of the holidays just became kind of a big joke to me. Not that I don't have respect for people who look at it as a religious orientation, but it's very funny to me because it's like a big jumble of similar things that I write about in the book that are so funny. One person thinks the gift is Kwanzaa, and the next person says it must be Christmas, and another person says it must be Hanukkah, and it's very humorous to look at the world from the perspective of a child who says, oh, great, it's the holidays. Can't we just celebrate?
Yeah. No, and I get that. I mean, exactly, you know, especially yesterday. I mean, it was my daughter's birthday, but it was Easter, you know. You know, for those who aren't religious and just celebrate whatever the national holiday is, to, you know, anybody who's of a Christian faith, you know, it was Easter yesterday, but it was my daughter's birthday. And so where some people would be like, oh, you know, and I have friends who are very much this way. They're like, well, we need to separate them, you know. That, you know, we're like, it's Easter and Ashley's birthday, and we just kind of celebrated them both together, and there was no real distinction between the two. It was just kind of like, you know, that her siblings got some Easter baskets as well. You know?
That's kind of great, because everyone will remember her birthday.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and my mom's birthday is on Halloween, so, you know, so I grew up, Halloween was very different for me than a lot of other kids because it was also my mom's birthday. And
oh,
so, yeah,
cake,
I mean,
and candy.
Yeah, you know, so, yeah, so I get that, you know, definitely get that. I have friends who have parents who are of a Christian faith, and then have a parent who's Jewish, and she's like, yeah, so we have, you know, the menorah out, and then we have the Christmas tree.
And, oh wow!
You know, it's kind of a blending of both, and I love the fact that your book does that. You know, that it shows, you know, that there's similar, you know, events in each holiday, because it's very true. My husband, he's a huge history buff, and so he, you know, anytime he learns of a religion or, you know, anything in history, I mean, he studies it down to anything he can find, all the way down to the folklore stuff. And that's like one of the biggest things he talks about. He's like, you know, if you ever really look at, I mean, even if you look at, like, you know, ancient Greeks, you know, and I'm talking like way back, you know, in BC times and stuff, and some of the things that they did as pagan, in a pagan religion type setting, how it's carried over into a lot of our traditional religions, depending on whatever religion you're in, you know, some of their traditions are actually embedded, you know, not all of it, but, you know, pieces of it are still there. And he's like, you know, nothing is disconnected from anything else. You know, there's just a slight variation to some, you know, to something before it, or that came around at the same time. And I think you do such a great job when the kids go into the forest and into their little, you know, secret world. I don't know how exactly you want it, because I don't want to give the book away, so... You know, but you know how they enter into this like little secret world, that, you know, these things magically start to happen, and that's what I love about it, is that each one from their different backgrounds realizes, oh well, this is similar to, you know, to this, and similar to this, and similar to that, and they realize, and I love that, and that's exactly what the message is of the kids of Dandelion Township, is, you know, no matter how different we think we are, we actually have a lot in common that we don't realize,
great.
You know.
Yeah,
and I love that.
Yeah,
I was really blessed by finding an illustrator who could create the essence of what I was writing about, too. I'm so glad that you understood it on a deeper level, you know, and in a fun way, and that's what it's meant to be. And, you know, I just felt so fortunate that in a very youthful style with great, great colors and characters, that I was able to work with someone who, Lisa M. Griffin, who's a great illustrator. She's just wonderful. And she created this fantasy world that I had in my head that became more universal by the fact that, you know, it's just as you understood how sort of on a spiritual level, that commonality is really rather deep and fun and neat, and she did too, and she created it in pictures, and so I feel super fortunate that we, you know, that we were able to do that together.
Yeah, I know, and I know Lisa's work, because she's also a contributor to Stories for Children magazine as one of our illustrators, so that's what makes it even more fun about having you guys, you know, doing the tour with your book, because, you know, we don't just know you as the author, we know your illustrator as well, which makes it always fun. And you're right, Lisa does amazing work. And I've noticed and I'm sure we have some of our illustrators listening, I'm not trying to knock any of our contributing illustrators, but I've noticed anytime we give Lisa something that's definitely of a cultural background, she really does her research into making sure she picks the right colors, and make sure, you know, that she makes them as subtle as they need to be, or as vivid as they need to be, based on that culture too, which is just
right. Amazing.
I mean,
they're so beautiful.
Yeah.
And vivid. I mean, the colors are just so alive, and you just keep wanting to look at the pictures over and over again.
Right. Right.
So, Nicole, I'm just curious, with the characters that are in the book, you know, because each chapter is kind of its own little mini story within itself as well, which is what I love, because that's one of the things when I talk to new authors or kids who are interested in writing or like to write, you know, they always I always teach them how to do short story writing. And I always tell them, I said, because if you write that way, you'll learn to write your chapters that way. And I was telling myself, you know, basically, to me, a book, at least the books I really enjoy, tend to be like smaller stories within the whole story, And your book's written very much that way. Each chapter builds upon each other, but they each stand on their own with their own beginning, middle, and ends as well. So in doing that, did you find that any of the stories you'd written in there or any of the characters that you introduced within your book were you, that you felt that you could say, yes, this was me 100%, or this person had, you know, a lot of me in them, not all of me, but, you know, these pieces of me from when I was, you know, this age? Or did you see any of that? I mean, sometimes, you know, authors throw themselves into the work and then sometimes, like, nope, they're all completely just made up. Each scenario is completely just, you know, made up.
I definitely am part of many of the characters, to be honest with you. I mean, on the one hand, Sherry was one of the main characters in the beginning because she starts out and it's where were you from? She was the one that had sort of undergone Katrina, and she reminded me of my friend Elva in some ways because she was sensitive. And yet I was sensitive too, and I anything could make me cry sometimes. So I had gone through my own experiences, and I related to that character. But then the other friends were me as well, because sometimes I like to make fun of a situation. My parents were also divorced, so I could have been Tammy. You know, it really doesn't. It's so funny, because I shot camera. I mentioned I was in television for a while, and later that's what Tammy does. I mean, it's, you know, and I directed a little, and later that's what Sherry does. And it's just a complete combination of friends that I've had, myself, and inventions. And I put myself into characters that even the boys, you know, if the boys are teasing someone and say something, I think of fellows that I've been friends with, or relatives, or people that are, you know, the characters may remind me of. But sometimes I would say something like that, but I would just make it more of a guy, you know, a kind of a guy. You let the muses just take off sometimes. I think when you're writing, the dialogue just shoots out of you, and you think, I would have said that, you know, and you say it, you know, you just sort of go for it.
No, I understand that. Now, what gave you the idea of a dandelion?
I grew up in New York, but I actually spent weekends and sometimes summers out at my dad's farm, where he eventually moved, you know, his country house out in New Jersey. And there were dandelions in a meadow, literally, as I had written about in the story. And we used to blow them. I mean, they were sort of all over the place. When you're out in the country like that, you often see them, the beautiful round dandelion clocks, and you blow them to make a wish. It was something we did as kids. But in this particular meadow that was so magical to us, it was a place we could run around freely and be children. You know, my dad used to say, go be kids. Like, he was reading the paper and wanted us to just go play. And we loved it. It was great. Okay, where do we go? And we'd sort of go hiking. As if we needed a hike to find this meadow, but it was pretty much right there. But we found this crazy route because getting to the meadow seemed more magical, I think, once you went through the forest a little bit. And there were dandelion clocks. So I just loved that. And Lisa obviously had, the illustrator, Lisa, had a similar feeling about it. And she created this amazing illustration of one of the characters blowing the dandelion, which was so perfect. And the editor of the L.A. Times Kids Reading Room loved the pictures. So she published both, you know, one of the kind of an earlier version of one of the chapters, as well as the illustration. So it's something that I think people have just experienced, that once they've experienced it, they know it. It's not exactly like finding a genie in a bottle, but sometimes you have a moment where a little bit of magic works. Other times you try it and it just, you know, the dandelion just falls apart. Nothing works. It doesn't happen. But I kind of relate this meadow to, in one of the blogs that you had me, that you sent to me to sort of answer questions and talk about it, to my experience in the 60s growing up in New York at Sheep's Meadow, where people from all over Manhattan and probably all the boroughs, I mean, certainly all the boroughs, came in to congregate in Sheep's Meadow, and sometimes, you know, they called it the Be-In, and sometimes it was a magical moment. Sometimes it was not planned. It was just us kids. I'm not saying adults weren't there, but all the kids just found themselves there. And this meadow out of New Jersey was similar, and the dandelions seemed to always be there. They were there right before the winter. They were there in the spring. They just seemed to pop up, and I don't know how or why, but it made it more magical to me.
Yeah, well, and I love the fact that you chose the dandelion because, I mean, you know, the wishing on the star we've seen done a lot of times. I mean, everybody knows, oh, we wish on the first star of the night, blah, 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 blah,
sure.
You know, we see that time and time again, and especially in old fairy tales. And, you know, there's always the fairy godmother or the, you know, the leprechaun or the whatever, the fairy or whatever that pops up. And I love the fact you use something that is so common in nature that you're right. I mean, I remember as a kid, you know, being out in the schoolyard and we'd go find the dandelions, and that's exactly what we'd do. We'd make a wish and blow on them. And, you know, I think it went to my mom told me, like, for every dandelion seed that spread across the world or whatever would help my wish, you know, that much more or something. And, you know, so I love the fact that you took something that, yeah, that every kid.
I like that. I like your mom.
Yeah, but, you know, but you think about that. I mean, because I remember doing that as a kid, and then when you contacted me about your book and we started, you know, putting the World of Ink tour together and stuff, and I saw the illustrations, and, you know, I had read through, like I said, I was going to sit down tonight with my daughter and read it because she's been bugging me, and we haven't had time to set my computer and read it, but when I went through it, I'm like, oh, yeah, dandelions, that's right, making wishes. I remember that. Like, I had completely forgotten about that as an adult. I mean, just gone. I mean, I know I've mentioned it to my kids when I see them, but, you know, and then it's like gone and out of my mind again. And so I love the fact that you know, that you brought the dandelion into a book, because I don't even think I've even come across a book that's ever talked about making wishes on dandelion or the magic behind dandelions that we remember as kids in any which way or form.
Good.
So I think that's great. And by the way, for those who are listening, Nicole sent me her book as an e-book, but it is available. It's also going to be available in print, right, on Amazon as well?
It is, yeah. It's available now.
Okay. Yeah, so it's in both formats. I just want people to go, oh, it's only an e-book. No, it's both. I just have the e-book version.
Okay.
So.
So do I at the moment. We did this right on the curb. You know, we got this ready just exactly on time.
Yeah, I know you're talking about, like, I'm not sure if it's going to be, you know, released for the after the tour's over, right when the tour is ending. So I'm really excited that the deadline, everything worked out to where the tour started. The book's actually now available out there on Amazon. So, you know, everybody can go check it out. And it's an e-book and in print format, which is lovely because, you know, like for me, I mean, I love print books because, you know, I can sit in my girls' rooms and, you know, on their bed with them when they're getting ready to go to bed at night and read the old traditional way. But then there's times where we're on the go and I can put it on my smartphone, or if I'm in my office and, you know, an author like yourself sends me their book and my kids are in my office with me, I'm like, hey, hop up on my lap, let's look at this book together. I want to hear what you think. And, you know, so I love the fact that the publishing industry has just given us so much more functionality in what we can do with reading.
Actually, yes, I do too. And I'm about a week behind on Kindle, so it's going to take me probably just the rest of the week to formalize everything with the technical crew. But that's the way it works, and we'll be up on Kindle as well.
Wonderful.
No, we also have a book trailer for the kids of Dandelion Township, which is a fun little book cover. It actually shows there's two illustrations in there of the book. And then some information on you and Lisa. I know that you've been out there seeing it. Have you heard any feedback on the book trailers? I mean, that's like another new thing kind of for people to get kind of a feel for, you know, for a book and to see. I love it. It's like a movie trailer. You know, you just get that quick few, you know, minute or second snapshot.
It's a wonderful thrill. Yeah. Yeah, you produced a very nice piece. I definitely have gotten great feedback on it.
That's great. I, every time I'm in here and I'm working on stuff and the kids hear the music, and it took so long. No, because we wanted to fix it. We're like, there's so many different you know, levels to your book. And we're like, well, which one do we want to hit on? Which one do you want to hit on? I'm like, let's hit on the mystery, you know, the mystery and you know, whimsy part of the book. And so it was like going through all this music, we're like, well, do we want music that's like, you know, where kids are having fun and they're all getting together and we're like, oh, we all get along and it's a utopia, or do we want to do like, you know, like the mystery, which is what we ended up hitting with the music. And every time I play it, the first time I played it, my son was like, are you watching Harry Potter over there? I'm like, no. Because my son felt it kind of sounded like a little bit like Harry Potter. I'm like, I'm hoping people don't think I'm using the Harry Potter music. Oh, my goodness. But but it was so fun working on it because, you know, I love it. It has that you know, it does. It just has that mystery and that suspense. Like, well, what's going to happen? What do they have to share with me? That I don't know already.
Nice.
Yeah. Now, your tour, so people know who are listening, is a month-long tour. We started actually a week into April because with everybody with spring break, Easter break, you know, depending on how different schools and whatever was going on, split stuff up. So it actually kicked off yesterday. So today is day two of your tour. They can go to theworldofinknetwork.com and under Authors on Tour, they will see your picture, and they can click on the hyperlink and see your schedule for the tour, see the book trailer. What other things, besides doing the World of Ink tour, do you have other things scheduled that you're going to be doing as well during this month of the release, or is this just the beginning of what you have planned?
That's a great question, and I think I'm guilty of the conversation we had prior to getting on air. When you said so many writers think they can sit back and write, and truthfully, you cannot at this point.
Yeah.
So I have my list of possible things to do and contacts to make, and I'm actually busy working on writing some other projects as well. So I'm taking this month to really be fully involved in the tour. And after that, I will look at other, you know, other ways of getting the book out. And I think Lisa is better at social marketing than I, so she's helping in that respect as well.
It is. It's a lot to do, you know. I know when my book came out, you know, years ago, it's been years now, it's like hard to believe it's been that long, but it is. You know, you sit there and think, okay, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and it's like trying to get speaking, you know, to go talk to schools, if it's a kid's book, to in-person, you know, book signings, to online stuff. It's a lot to do. It really is. But what's exciting about your tour, because we just, I know you signed up for it before, when we just had our one tour package, and we offer a couple of different. So yours has kind of a combination of some of the different things we offered. Yours is you're going to be in early May. You're going to be reading a couple of chapters on another Blog Talk Radio show, and then you have an interview with Renee Hand on the Unknown Author show to talk with her about the book a little bit more. Plus, we have book reviews. Some different guest posts where you've written on various topics, which I think is exciting. I've gotten to see them, from, you know, inspiration to, you know, tips on the writing world to interviews. So it's going to be an exciting tour for those that are you know, following along, or this is the first time they're hearing about your tour with us. To get to know you and your book, The Kids of Dandelion Township, better. Is there anything that you want people to, you know, it's so hard because, I mean, you have so many different messages in there, but is there like one major message that you're hoping, you know, that teachers, parents, you know, kids reading the book really take away when they pick up your book and read it, and when they're done, close the cover and go, wow, you know, I really picked up on this.
I think so. I think there is an answer to that. And I'll probably change my mind next week if you ask me. But for the moment, this is the one that they came to my mind now. One of the important issues in the book is goals that kids have. I don't think people always, adults, always consider how difficult the simple goals in life are and how they affect everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, one chapter gets a little bit into, you know, trying to get better grades. You know, each chapter has its own little message and what that's like. And, you know, another chapter is a little bit of how to have fun and still get your schoolwork done. And, you know, there's the things that kids deal with. The message that I'm trying to get across is whatever hardships children face, whether they are monumental or tragic or everyday hardships that you deal with, bullies or simply, you know, I say that because that's a common difficulty in the news lately.
Yeah.
I don't really deal with that in the book, but the idea of getting better grades and things like that, whatever your hardship may be, whether it's seems too big or too small, nothing really is. And the purpose and the message of the book, in a sense, is to be able to look for friendship and a way of dealing with your tasks and finding better routes of accomplishing your goals and still being children and having fun and enjoying the pleasure of being a child together with your friends and together in a community where there's a sense out there where magic occurs or spiritual positive energy occurs or something that you may not necessarily be looking for, that as long as you're open for it and aware, it may come to you. You may suddenly be a part of that that gift of childlike innocence and freedom, even if your life is difficult in one way or another. I think
mm-hmm.
that's the message.
No, I think it's great, you know, and it's true. I mean, I was just talking to my son earlier and my husband today when we're all getting up for the day, because I was doing my whole deer in the headlight stare thing, which usually means I have some character talking to me in my head. Yeah, they'll look like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm fine." Like, "Are you sure? You're kind of like staring off into La La Land, you know, like a car could just come hit you any second." And you're just like, you know. And I'm like, "No, there's this character in my head talking." And you know, in the character, of course, that was talking to me, it's a young adult character, so it's an idea for a young adult book. But the whole idea behind what this person was chattering away in my head about, and I'm sure he's going, "Oh my gosh, she needs to go to the crazy bin." But is, you know, the idea is that taking away, you know, empowering kids was what she was telling me, like, that in this world that she lives in, that, you know, fiction books have been taken away because they don't want kids to feel empowered. And I love the fact that your book, that's why it made me think of this, my character this morning, is, you know, it's so true, you know, that having books out there that where kids put it down and they feel empowered and they feel they can, you know, accomplish, do, you know, set goals, feel energized, you know, build their self-esteem, whatever it is so important. And I think that that's, you know, a great message because, especially with the way things are, I mean, and as we're, especially now with the economics that we see going on, not just in the United States, but, you know, we see Canada being affected, Europe's being affected, you know, we're seeing it globally, that, you know, these kids are seeing this and they're just like, "Oh my gosh, you know, can I really make a difference in this world? I'm watching my parents and they're struggling." And, you know, and so I think it's important that kids understand they can be empowered, that they can set goals and achieve those goals. And, you know, it might be a little bit of a struggle, especially right now with the way things are, but, you know, that it can happen. And so I think that's great. And,
yeah, well,
you know,
it's very easy for kids to be so depressed and, you know, to be so down on themselves and on everything else. You know, and there are times, you know, I see a lot of angry kids, you know, kids that say, "Well, you know, everything's short and nothing's, you know, nothing's abundant anymore and I have to work hard for everything." But, you know, I think, you know, they're learning a lot of important lessons when they do that too, aren't they? So
definitely.
Yeah.
I think so too. And so I think that's great. And I think, you know, especially with, the fact that our world's getting smaller with the internet and, you know, all the different social media out there and stuff that, you know, like I said, I love the fact that your book brings in all the different, you know, backgrounds depending on, you know, doesn't matter what it is, it's cultural, religious, whatever, you know, that we can all basically have some type of a utopia to some degree in our lives.
Absolutely.
You know, while dealing with these. And I think friendships are so important. I mean, I think back, you know, on as a kid when I read your book, and I went to three different high schools. I can't even tell you how many different elementary schools I went to. And I was so grateful I went to only one junior high. But I actually got to stay put for a few years. It was great. But, you know, I think about that, and I think about all the different people I've met. You know, and I've lived from, like, you know, $500,000 homes to literally low-income housing where, you know, it was government-supported housing. So I've lived from almost, you know, not billionaire, you know, mansion, but, you know, $500,000 home. And I'm talking when I'm saying $500,000 homes for those who are thinking about, I mean, this is like, you know, late 80s, so they're probably like million-dollar-plus homes now.
Oh, yeah.
You know? But, yeah. Back then, you know, it wasn't the market, and I'm talking when the market bubble was happening. I mean, they're probably back down to like $500,000 homes, who knows now, but,
yeah.
You know, this was, you know, a long time ago, and I think back to that and all the different people I've met, and I'm just like, you know, they really helped define who I was and in different situations. If it wasn't for those friendships and them being able to relate to what I was going through, I don't think a lot of times, I mean, family's there, but sometimes, you know, it's hard as parents to, and I see this now with my own kids, you know, to truly relate to them. And I think you hit a great point, Irene, about how kids get depressed or angry now, because I think we forget as adults how kids are more emotionally based to how they react.
Yeah, absolutely.
Versus
yeah.
adults. I think adults, we tend to, I'm not saying we don't have emotional reaction, we do, but we tend to at least be a little bit more logical.
Yeah.
And in most cases, most of the time, in the way we react, I would hope.
Well, most of the time we do.
Yeah.
It's hard sometimes when we get in the throes of emotion and all. But, I work with a lot of kids very closely that way, you know, both at the college level, the high school level, and even at the elementary school level. And I'm just seeing a huge change in kids and their whole overall outlook, you know. And it's there are times I get a little worried about it, but I can figure out how to help them, you know, if I can do that. Then I think I'm doing a good job, which is, you know, what I try to do with my writing and with my teaching and, of course, with my counseling and stuff like that. So you know, but when you're in the trenches, you really see it firsthand, you know, that the whole climate of our youth culture has really shifted. That, you know, we as adults, you know, have to be there, and not so much as families, but teachers too, you know, and people that are in education, and people also that just run into kids, you know, walking across the street or something. You know, we can all touch people's lives, and you know, I think that's important too. And that's why, Nicole's book. I hope I'm getting your first name right. Am I?
Sure.
Absolutely. Isn't that awful? Because your first name even slipped on me. That's why your book is so important, I think, is because you're doing exactly that, and you know. I really commend you on that. So, thank you for a wonderful book.
Nicole, I love what Irene was saying and talking about teachers and parents. I mean, there's a lot of parents who are homeschooling and stuff. I mean, with your book, and I don't know if this is something you've thought about or if anybody's asked about, I mean, just because you do talk, I mean, each chapter, like, you know, as we've mentioned before, you know, has its own, you know, theme within the main theme of course, because of Dandelion Township. Have you thought about maybe eventually doing some type of, like, teacher's guide or Q&A that teachers can maybe get from your website or something? Because, I mean, I really can see it as a great teaching tool that teachers can use, that homeschooling parents can use, or just regular parents who like to bring literature more into the home that the public schools don't offer. Is that something that maybe you're thinking about in the future, or maybe adding, you know, taking some of those individual storylines and you know, adding to and making it into a series or anything like that?
Well, I am thinking of another book that is based on the same kids and characters and theme and story. So I do have somewhere else to go with it. As far as the idea of teaching, it's a very interesting world, actually. Both of you are hitting upon many things that I think about often, because it's a new world for the dichotomy between children and adults, because children are on the cutting edge of technology. Four-year-olds know more about iPads than 40-year-olds.
I know.
It's just phenomenal. I mean, it's not even, you know, it's not even close. You can walk into an Apple store and see a six-year-old doing more than what you ever knew could be done on anything.
Right.
It doesn't happen every day, but certainly at the point when they're 10, and when the 12-year-olds, you know, or 16, or the 16-year-olds that are good with technology get out of school or whatever, but it's an entirely different world, and teaching is on a whole different level. So that if a teacher says anything at all, a kid can sit there on their iPhone and Google it and say, no, you're wrong.
Exactly.
We never had that when we were kids. You are wrong. She is wrong. The whole class, hush. She's wrong here. Prove it. And, you know, 30 seconds later, the teachers are kind of thinking, well, you know, maybe I was kind of right. I mean, I was right about the point of view I have or one angle of it. But it's not a matter of respect. It is a matter of dealing with the reality of our generation and our generations to come. And this book does not get into technology. It's a far cry from many of the advantages of a Harry Potter, which deals with fantasy and deals with, you know, sort of, what are they? They're sort of like iPad tablets in space that are, what's the word? Where something is a holograph or something. You know, I mean, it's so far beyond where we are now. It's so futuristic that it has a lot of elements that are just fabulous. In terms of teaching and the concept of teaching, I do believe there is an essence of what is universal in my book. I do believe that kids are dealing with all of the things that I've written about in this book. I do believe for the age range, it fits quite well.
Mm-hmm.
It's like seeing a movie, a fantasy movie that isn't in today. It's in a parallel universe, but some similar things have, you know, are occurring in a sense.
Right.
And it could be this reality, but really far out. So I'm answering your question by saying there are some elements that are extremely important on a social level for kids, teachers, and parents to understand from the point of view in which I'm expressing how children respond and react to our world and what is a positive way of getting through it. There's a lot there. In terms of what the kids are looking at, technology-wise, that's not what this book is about. It's about something spiritual that is not religious, but it encompasses, you know, any kind of spirituality, whether it's that you believe in nature or you believe in a God or you believe in a religion, it's fine. But mainly it's about everyday situations that children face and finding something positive and a way to get through life in a good and inspiring way in which you can grow also through school. And I think that's why you're asking, Virginia, the question. Also, to manage your classes, to manage your skills in behavior with children that you might not have a lot in common with at first, you don't think. But then you realize emotionally, hey, we're all sensitive. We all think things are funny. We all enjoy, we all enjoy running around in a meadow, or if we can't quite do that, laughing at a good joke or something.
Right.
A lot of things we all enjoy, so it's really for all children.
Yeah, it is. You know, and because it's not scientific. I mean, you know, it's not scientific. It's not a sci-fi type book at all. I mean, it's not. It's more of your, you know, general mainstream children's book. You know, obviously with some fantasy elements definitely to it. But, you know, anybody who grew up or, you know, or those younger parents out there that have discovered Star Trek, it really reminds me of Gene Roddenberry's, you know, vision of what Star Trek was about, which was that, you know, basically, not that people still don't have, you know, because I don't know if you've ever watched Star Trek yourself, Nicole. I'm a Trekkie. I will admit I've watched all of them.
But I mean, like I said,
yours is more, you know, general mainstream fiction with fantasy elements. But I mean, the overall vision reminds me a lot of Gene Roddenberry, and the fact that it's that, you know, getting to the point to where we're out there to better ourselves, and even if we don't totally agree or understand somebody of a different, you know, whatever background that we have, we can find those similarities and to some degree have some type of a utopian understanding, like you said, you know, that we both have feelings. We both get angry. We both laugh. We whatever it is. We both like art. We both hate math. You know, whatever it is, you know, you can find those likenesses. Because, I mean, it's really, if you think about it, you know, there hasn't been one time where I've watched, you know, a show that has that overall kind of a theme to it that they say, you know, yes, we all get along and we just are completely colorblind and blind to each other's religious beliefs. No, they're not. They never are. They've just learned to see beyond that and find where things are, like, you know, are very similar. So anybody who's a Trekkie fan, you'll like this book, is what I'm trying to say, even though it's not sci-fi. You'll still like the book because that overall theme is there.
I don't want to feel like a total dinosaur, but to give another comparison, it's almost like a parent saying, or a friend or whomever, saying, come on, we're going to go to the museum. You can't really use your iPhone. You can't really take pictures, but come on, come with me.
Yeah.
And some of the pictures are pop and fun and amazing and really enjoyable. And some are almost interactive because the characters come to life and the pictures are wonderful. And some are more classic, and it's interesting and it's fun to look at and think about. That's what the book is like. It's not like your everyday adventure on television or, you know, with your iPad, but it is a book adventure, and it's one that I think is pleasing and actually it's worthy of a good read.
Well, here's a quirky kind of quote we can use to kind of describe the book. If anybody's ever seen the movie Shrek, the very first one, and Donkey turns to Shrek and says, well, you know, I always thought ogres were mean and blah, 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 blah. And Shrek turns and he's like, no, ogres are like onions. They have layers.
Right.
You know?
I remember that one.
That's why that quote popped into my head. I mean, it's really what I think of the kids of Dandelion Township like. It has layers. There's not, I mean, yes, there's like the general where most kids will probably pick up on. But, you know, the little bit older kid will pick up on, you know, maybe the second or third layer, and the adult who's sitting there reading the book will pick up on, you know, the deeper layers. And, you know, it is. I mean, there's multiple layers really to the story, and, you know, and that's what I love about it. That's why I think what makes it such a great book, honestly, is because of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have somebody calling in for a question because I see somebody in the queue, so we'll bring them on as we're getting to the end of our show, so hold on. Caller 7450, did you have a question for us on the show?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Do you agree that Captain James T. Kirk is far superior to Captain Picard?
You know what? They're both very different, and I'm not going to get into a whole sci-fi conversation.
These are my burning questions. I've been waiting here, and these are my burning questions.
Your burning questions are Star Trek questions? I think they're very different. You know,
you have to pick a better one. Only one can lead the crew to a better universe. And I'm not going to count Star Trek Generations. That movie was terrible.
they're two dynamically different personalities. They really are.
Very different.
And they're both captains of the best of the actual franchises. Because no one, I mean, like, let's just admit, Voyager and Enterprise, they kind of suck. Deep Space Nine is all right. The animated series, no one talks about. Even Gene Roddenberry disowned the thing himself. So that's why my main comparison is to Captain Kirk and to Captain Picard. I mean, this is a battle that will never end, and we would need a definitive answer. So which side are you on?
Oh, Lord.
Did you want to answer that, Nicole, or did you want to keep it where they're very different personalities?
To be honest with you, I haven't seen the new Star Trek, so I saw the old ones, but Kirk
no,
was...
No, please,
was
please do yourself a favor. Do not see Star Trek 11. That is the that is the third worst Star Trek film, and J.J. Abrams should be ashamed of himself.
Oh.
Captain Kirk is the one. That's what I would say.
Well, you know,
absolutely.
and tying it back to your book, Nicole, as I answer this question, you know, Kirk is definitely your adventurer, and you know he's definitely the one who's going to stand up. And if it comes to it, you know, obviously use fists, so he'll use brute force if he has to stand up for the greater good. And I think you have a few characters that have that kind of personality in there, in your book as well. That sometimes you know, words don't quite get there. But you know, there are the Picards in the world that we need. We need those diplomats. They are needed. So. To help talk down the hot-headed Kurtz in the world.
But the thing, though, is that I'm not even talking about strictly the series. Because, yeah, in the motion pictures, Kirk and Picard were both jackasses. We can all admit that. I'm talking about original series, Next Generation, which one did a lot more for the crew and which one got their crew out of there alive. I mean, I love Picard. Patrick Stewart's one of my favorite actors out there. I'm sorry, Captain Kirk is just a far superior leader, and if it was on the SS Enterprise, I would want him to be leading me to the depths of the universe and beyond.
The original series definitely had more because it was Gene Roddenberry's vision. I mean, that one stuck to the original vision the most.
Except
you know, yeah, I'd go with the original as the best out of all of them, definitely. But thanks for calling.
Well, you're talking about hands-on.
All right. Well, thank you for calling.
Not better or worse. It's hands-on. I know what you're talking about. I understand your answer, Virginia, now that I'm understanding what the question is a little more fully. But
yeah.
It's just a hands-on running with who do you want to grab, you know, grab your hand and say you're okay. But on the other hand, they work together. So that's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, it works. You know, it actually relates to the book because I've got Dylan, who's one of the characters, who really kind of helps lead the kids in this.
Yeah,
and
that's
in a sense, the leader. But
yeah.
In another sense, the other kids are fully involved and, you know, at a particular time, and Tyler's sort of involved in making a statement, and Carlos, and it's they work together as long as there's synergy.
Yeah, no, you're right, and it's very true. So, see what happens? We use the Gene Roddenberry and Star Trek analogy, and whammo, we get into the
debate. There you go.
And that's definitely a debate I have heard over and over again.
Yeah. Well.
So that's how we spark listeners, do we, Virginia?
Yes.
Well,
no, that's great.
Yeah, he's a good example. Actually, what's his name? Kirk is a good example of a sleeper. He's one of those guys that everybody knows who he is, and then he came back on television doing all these funny things, and it's kind of like, why do people think he's so funny? He was Captain Kirk. How could he be doing all this, you know, getting all this fame as a humorous actor? But the reason is he's a sleeper. Everybody trusts him. He has that aura, that quality, something that's magical, and that's, I think, what I'm trying to attain. I love the comparison, actually. I think it's funny the caller came in and wanted to spar with us about who's a better leader, but it's all relative, I suppose.
Yeah, but it's true. I mean, I think it was great in the fact that, you know, like you said, it's very true. You do have to, even though there is synergy with all the characters in your book, you know, you do have ones that at times, you know, take charge and have to lead, and you do. You have to have somebody who's willing to get hands-on and, you know, like I said, no, you don't always have to get physical. I mean, unfortunately, we know in our history, it doesn't matter, you know, where in the world, you know, unfortunately, sometimes you do have to take action physically. But, you know, you do need somebody who is willing to take charge and to make those hard calls, even if they're the unpopular decisions of the world.
Absolutely.
All right. So, that's great. Well, Nicole, it's been great having you on here, talking to you about, you know, writing and your book, The Kids of Dandelion Township, that released this month. Those who are interested, again, you can go to theworldofinknetwork.com, which is our new website, and under Authors on Tour, you will find Nicole there and the link to her tour page and the different stops she has going on. Like I said, there's interviews, articles, guest posts, spotlights, couple more blog talk interviews, readings that will happen. The book trailer is there. It's actually on the front page of the World of Ink Network website. It's our featured book trailer this month as well. And then, Nicole, do you want to share your website so they can also go there, find out more about you as well and what you have going on?
Sure. It's my name, which is difficult. Probably can find it on this, you know, on the radio blog, the spelling, or on World of Ink. But it is www.nicole, with no H, N-I-C-O-L-E. And my last name is Borgenicht, BORGENICHT.com.
Yep, and we do have it in the episode description page for today. The links are there as well. And then, of course, you know, if you go to worldofinknetwork.com, you can go there and connect to Nicole and even to Lisa, the illustrator's websites as well. So you can even see some of Lisa's artwork for the book and, you know, other things that she's done. So if you really are into illustrating all of that, that's a great place to go for that. If you're interested more in writing and learning about that, of course, obviously following Nicole's where you'd want to be for that information as well. So, but we thank everybody for listening. It's been great having you on here, Nicole. I think this is probably one of our most engaging shows that we've had in a while.
Yeah, it has been. How wonderful.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun. I really appreciate it.
All right. Well, we wish you much, much success with your book, and we hope that those who listen today and tune in later when the show's available on demand to listen to, that they will follow along through April and through the first few weeks of May of your tour, because there's a lot of fun things. Plus, there's giveaways. I forgot to mention that there will be a few ebook giveaways going on as well. So you can always enter those and possibly win a free ebook copy of The Kids of Dandelion Township. So that's always a fun way to you know, get involved. And of course, you know, Nicole would always be happy for you to leave a review if you do win a free copy, because obviously reviews help authors.
True. <so. laughs>
Well, we hope you have a great rest of the week, Nicole, and I know you and I will be crossing paths throughout the tour, so I will talk to you soon, I'm sure. And is there anything else you'd like to leave for our listeners before we say goodbye?
No, not really. Just thank you so much.
All right.
Really,
it was really fun.
Okay,
it was great getting to know you more.
All right. And for our listeners, so you know, tomorrow Marcia Casper Cook has her show, A Good Story is a Good Story. It's going to be a great show. I think we were talking earlier today, and Marcia, if I get this wrong, I'm really sorry. I know she was talking about, like, I think it was like kidney disease or something with kidney illness. So anyways, it's going to be a really great show. She always gets on some really cool topics, you know, that aren't just book-related topics. She gets on true life story topics as well. So she's going to have some really great guests for you to tune into and listen to as well. I'm sure we'll have a few other shows that will pop up throughout this week. I know there was discussion of possibly a show on Friday that Marcia may be doing as well. And then next week, we won't have a Stories for Children show, but there will be a What is Success show a week from this coming Friday, and I'm sure Marcia will possibly pop up with a few Good Stories, a Good Story show. And then toward the end of the month, on the third Wednesday, is the Family Matters show. It's the one we keep trying to have.
Oh,
hi,
Irene. Yeah.
Oh, keep trying to have that show. Seven Successful Habits of Teens. And so hopefully we won't have any weather issues or computer glitch issues. And, yeah, so hopefully that show will actually finally happen, because it's been 2 months in the waiting.
And yet it's such a great topic and great show. So
it is, and we have some great follow-ups to that as well. So, so anyways, if all goes well, we will be on the third Wednesday with the Family Matters show, which will be with myself, V.S. Grenier, Irene Roth, and Keisha Burcham. So definitely try and catch that show. That's always a great show for teachers and parents and kids, of course, to tune into, because we're always talking about issues that relate to family and children and ways to help better our lives, or just, you know, ideas and things to think about that maybe we don't think about sometimes. So definitely try and tune in. And I'm sure we'll have some other shows, like I said, popping up. We're still coming back from vacation, so we're still ironing out our schedule. So definitely come back to the World of Ink Network here at Blog Talk Radio to see what we have going on. And we thank you all for listening. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Follow me to the World of Ink.